The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to a very special episode of The Big Red Couch. Today we have audience feedback from Will, in which he attempts to shame us horribly at our own job and produces content for, well, forever. And we're going to see if we can run this down and present it to you. Today on the mics, we have Ben from The Manor and from the Big Red Couch recording studio,
Craig. Right, so who was going to do the first one from this absolute flood of content from Will?
Craig, right. You are going to read first section from Will for our memorable Yellow Knife Man episode back in episode 41.
Okay, so here we have it. In this game, a woman from Florida has left her boyfriend/husband for a man with a yellow knife. The knife is magical, and the man used it to enthrall the Florida woman into going with him for some nefarious purpose, such as a sacrifice. The Florida man saw his wife walking away with the man with the yellow knife and called police. The police, being the epitome of cleverness, have dubbed the kidnapper Yellow Knife Man. I think it'd be kind of cool to have the knife be made out of amber, so that when somebody is killed with it, their soul is absorbed and used to power superpowers like heightened strength or enhanced speed in the knife wielder. The players are either paranormal investigators, which could be part of an ongoing campaign, or regular PIs that have no idea that the paranormal exists, which could be a one-shot or the start of a campaign. Will is envisaging this as either a fate game of some stripe, or a GURPS game, because GURPS is awesome.
So that's horribly literally and literally horrible.
It's taken kind of nice in that regard. Trying to take things absolutely literally is often my shtick, so I completely missed this one.
So this crazy superpowered serial killer with mystic overtones wandering around abducting people and probably sacrificing them because special knives, they have kind of a...
There's a stigma. There's a stigma attached to special magical knives. I'm not going to say it applies in all cases, but stereotypes exist for a reason, people. I'll admit, looking at this, we've got Florida, we've got guy with a knife kidnapping people. I can see this as being a really hideous take on Dexter.
Yes, definitely. Dexter with some fancy cutlery. So the idea of regular procedural crime drama pitted against somebody who apparently has no fucks when it comes to committing crimes in the open, and apparently the weird magical wherewithal to just wander off, that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've got to say, of the options of sort of paranormal investigator versus regular private investigations or even cops, I would be tempted to go with the regular Joe approach. It does put me in mind of, there's a movie, Split Second?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Which has many fine qualities and one or two dreadful ones.
Dude, it has the line, coffee, chocolate, and bigger fucking guns.
That would be one of the awesome qualities, yes.
The absolutely redeeming qualities. There's no other.
Rutger Hauer from Recollection.
Rutger Hauer and the guy who was in Taggart as the old crusty detective sidekick.
Huh. That bit I did not know.
A flooded London after the seas rise, chasing some sort of supernatural killer.
Oh, yes, because they're always sloshing around in at least ankle-deep water.
Yeah, that must have been fun to make.
Yeah. This one would definitely go with the regular cops dragged into this sort of thing. And yeah, the whole thing of it being a one-shot or the start of a campaign, doing it as a short story arc with the option of then continuing the campaign if people want to.
I'd be interested in actually spurred off the line where it says the police have dubbed him the Yellow Knife Man. I'd be actually interested in doing it as something that has come to people's attention virally. This has come through YouTube videos and people taking footage on their cell phones. And it's like no one's entirely sure because it hasn't been able to be properly investigated, but these images have turned up and becomes a very like a Slender Man urban legend kind of thing. And consequently, no one's entirely sure what's going on here, but there's definitely footage of this figure wandering around with a glowing yellow knife doing stuff.
Interesting. So it's potentially a case where the police aren't paying any attention to it whatsoever because it's some sort of hoax video some idiot put on the internet.
It's like, oh, someone disappeared, and apparently they were and you know, just enough to set it off, like this person has done odd things before, or they're involved in a visual effects studio and they've done other sort of fakey looking things. And no, actually, the terrible monster from the odd has actually dragged them off, and the player's job is to figure out how to solve the problem and, you know, not get fired for gross incompetence or having bizarre mental issues.
Interesting. I just had the thought of if the sort of visual effects artist or crew known as the faking hoaxer ever gets kidnapped by aliens on camera, nobody will ever believe it.
Yes. The whole cried wolf thing has been full effect.
Indeed, but in this case, it's less cried wolf and more released very well-rendered videos of wolves on YouTube.
It's true. It's as if Freddie Wong was gunned down in public, people would claim it looks fake. Because he's done all these special effects movies on YouTube to showcase his art. You know, sometimes people fire and, you know, flowers bloom instead of bullet holes, so he can demonstrate the sorts of things he's doing.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Freddie W. Rocket Jump on YouTube.
I shall look that up, partially for my own interests and partially for the show notes. Would you be going with just complete schlubs, or would you be going with cops?
No, I think I'd be going with professionals who have something to lose and awareness that they could lose it.
Which is sort of in not quite top cop territory, but certainly person of professional standing, yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, they don't want to completely destroy their careers. They think there's something going on. They're not sure what. And by the time that they're sure, they are up to their necks.
Ah.
So at this point,
you don't know where that line was until you turn around and look over your shoulder and see it a long way back.
Yeah. At the point where you've done something crazy, but you've got nothing to show for it. Yeah. I like.
That'd be cool. Yeah. That would be a lot of fun. I think.
And I think the game could be, I think the game, just on the basis, will tend towards the horrible.
Yeah, I'd not want to go with a comedic sort of system.
Yeah, with the abductions and the knife and so forth, it's going to be kind of, it's going to be a bit icky. But good idea, that spurs some ideas for me at least, kind of like that. And the shadowy figure with the glowing yellow blade, kind of, that could be interesting.
I did have that, I did have a plan for doing a Dresden Files-y game at some point, and that would make a really fun start.
And something about the totally not overblown name, the Yellow Knife Man. There's nothing to it, except the fact that, yeah.
He's no ice truck killer, he's no Bay Harbor Butcher, he's just the Yellow Knife Man.
Yeah, something chilling about that.
Hmm.
Cool. All right, so on to our next submission, which he has pitched in the ring for episode 42, Every Pony, It's the Singularity. There is a climate event called Singularity, where certain weather phenomena happen on or around certain dates, such as Groundhog Day and 6 more weeks of winter. In this scenario, Punxsutawney Phil is missing and has been replaced by the rotating cast of My Little Pony, each of which is messing with the weather. The goal of the game is to convince the ponies to knock it off and help you find Phil. As the ponies rotate who's forecasting the weather, a different pony is able to go and help you to find Phil. Honestly, I'm not sure how the game would work or what system you would use, but I'm kind of leaning towards a card game of some kind.
Ha! Huh.
Yeah. That's a interesting possibility. Seems a little evil, but...
I'm going to put it out there right now. I do not think that Phoenix Command or Millennium's End would be a good fit for this game. I'm just going to say it.
Yes, their meteorological systems are terrible.
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to get my gun and I'm going to shoot the tornado in the 23.
Unless the players get a kick out of the GM's impressions of the cast and characters of My Little Pony, I can't see that working. And despite my history of one of my most successful games lately being a My Little Pony game, I'm having trouble with that one.
I would be tempted. I think I agree with the more of the card game line. I would be tempted, if I was trying to do it as an RPG, to really embrace the rotating cast of My Little Ponies. And so have a game where you've got, ideally, six players. They've got their own characters, but you've also assigned each of them a pony.
Right.
And so when the pony gets replaced, you sub out their character for the specific pony.
Okay, so you have to leave someone behind to try and keep the pony who's currently sitting on the stump in the middle of Punxsutawney focused or distracted enough that the world isn't destroyed by tornadoes, and you take their opposite away on the group, and they get to play the replaced pony.
Yes.
Interesting. Still not sure if your audience will be a consideration.
Yeah, I think doing it as sort of a combination of card game slash RPG, I think, where you could have some limits on what the ponies are capable of doing to mess things up. I mean, Rainbow Dash is clearly able to move weather around. Fluttershy is clearly able to do stuff with animals. I am not 100% sure what Applejack would do, but it's either going to be thoroughly mundane or incredibly effective, or both.
She kicks things. It works. No. The other angle that I'm thinking of there is that the Groundhog Day in Ponyville would be pretty terrifying. If you just recast the entire film as ponies. I could see the showrunners actually doing a really good job of that.
Yes. It would mean making a pony that looks like Bill Murray.
Hey, they made one that looks like John Goodman, so I don't think it's that much of a challenge.
They did?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think I missed that one.
Well, they've got the main cast of the Big Lebowski in one of the shots.
Oh, that's right.
Random episode, including the Jesus. So, yeah, I don't believe anything is beyond them. And I mean that in all.
That's true. And they do have one that looks like David Tennant. So, yeah, fair call. Yeah. With the sticky uppy hair.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so. Okay. As an RPG, as you say, you would either need a GM who did phenomenal pony impressions or...
that people loved. This is very important.
Yeah. Or who had an enormous amount of leverage over his players. And at this point, I'm going to have to link back to Yellow Knife Man kidnapping people, because I think that's the kind of level of leverage. I mean, this is getting to the area of somebody has kidnapped some people, put them in the basement, and is forcing them to play My Little Pony.
Which has never happened to my knowledge.
No, not to my knowledge.
So yeah,
it's a ground level bungalow. But as a card game with a certain amount of limitation on what the pony in question can do.
Yeah.
So they can sort of throw problems or relate appropriate problems into the mix, as it were.
Mm. There is a CCG based on the franchise which has problems and so forth. Maybe it would be something that I don't know much about it, but definitely. You have problems to solve and friends to solve them with. And apparently it works pretty well.
Okay.
So, yeah, that may be maybe that sort of issue. But yeah, and if it's basically pitching a game where you have a resource that the players can use, but they need to swap between different aspects of that resource, and
those aspects are going to also be causing them problems.
And also the resource in question will allow them to do things, and maybe they have to figure out the best order to do these things. You know, they've got to round up these animals and fix this thing over here, and yeah. So that's kind of the thing that I think he's pitching off as mechanically, and I don't know how you'd do that in a card game, to be honest.
I'd go with something that's a bit of a narrativist card game, as it were. So, sort of riff on things like Once Upon a Time, or to a lesser extent, the Gru card game. where somebody's, you know, you're manipulating the cards and you're manipulating the rule set, but you're also, there's a certain story element going on in there.
Yeah. Okay. I can't think of any more offerings for that one.
Likewise, I do like the idea. I do very much like the idea of sort of a something that's sitting somewhere between a very freeform RPG and a card game. That would be quite a bit of fun. You'd probably want to make sure that some players didn't end up with some ponies. I'm sure all of us out there, all of you in the audience, can think of the people who just should not under any circumstance be allowed to play a particular pony.
Yes. Terrible things may happen.
Terrible, terrible things.
All right. So, and we have, Will has provided us one for episode 43, They Fight Crime.
All right. Shall I do this one? Was that one mine or yours?
That one's yours.
Okay. It's for They Fight Crime. Will has visited the site and hit the button and come up with... He's an uncontrollable, soccer-playing cat burglar on a search for his missing sister. She's a virginal, impetuous cab driver on her way to prison for a murder she didn't commit. They fight crime. And Will goes on. So, he's a cat who is a burglar and plays soccer uncontrollably and very badly. She snuck into the very first cab with an AI, which is kind of glitchy and goes where it wants, as opposed to where the fare wants to go. She's hiding from the police, as she was framed for her husband's murder. He gets into the cab and says he wants to be taken to downtown, because he has a lead on his sister. The cab, impetuous as it is, goes around the outer belt, inadvertently smashing into the getaway car from a bank robbery, thus foiling the crew. From that point on, they use the cab as their means of occasionally getting where they need to be. I have no idea what to do with this, other than it made me laugh.
Yes, this sounds like one of those very trippy semi-sci-fi books, like Only Forward or Gun with Occasional Music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's an odd one. I don't know where to go with that one either.
Okay, I'm just...
But like I said, yes, it's a funny story.
Sounds I'm going to assume Quags or maybe Fate Accelerated for this one.
Yeah. It very much feels like a random crazy happenstance kind of scenario.
Oh, yeah. Actually, this would be the sort of thing where I would reach for a deck of storyteller cards before the... Okay, and the bizarre thing that happens is a scientist with a big grin on her face burying a book in the desert and a boxer standing in the library screaming at a scroll. I would... Yeah, I would approach this one as you say, the bizarre happenstance game. Has a certain beer and pretzels feel to it?
Yes, it sounds like light content and wackiness.
So much wackiness. Also, cat playing soccer but badly. I can see that. I can see the ball getting stuck underneath the grandstand with the cat sort of trying to fish it out.
It'd also have to dribble by bunting it along with its head, which wouldn't be very dignified.
Well, they're quite good at the sideways whap, but less. Not all of them have figured out the dribble thing.
Well, some of them dribble, but it's more of a mouth bit.
Yeah, which I'm not sure whether drooling on the ball is actually allowed or not in soccer. It may never have come up.
Athletes and drool, I'm sure it has.
True, Rooney maybe.
All right.
Okay, that was a bit weird. So taking that very slightly seriously for a second, and only a second, yeah, running that as a game, I would go with either Fate Accelerated, simply because it's very, very quick to set up characters. Quags, because it's almost as quick and nice in general. And yeah, if I was running that as sort of a weekly beer and pretzels game, it would totally be a, okay, this is the wacky shit that's occurring. this time. This is the scenario that you quite literally have possibly crashed into. And just go from there.
Okay.
So it would probably go off the rails incredibly quickly almost every episode. So maybe Teenagers from Outer Space would be a good fit for this as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just to break up the Will's magnificent rampage, we've got some con-related news because I've actually attended a con and Craig is winding up to go to the big one, the big kahuna. So, all right. So, last weekend I was at the Capcom 24 in Wellington. I think there's indeed 24 iterations of Capcom since must have been 1991, and it's a not-for-profit, not quite a competition, but there are some prizes. Role-playing convention run over 2 days. And, yeah, I played in no less than 7 games and had a hell of a good time.
7 games over 2 days?
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
Yeah, well, all 3-hour games, but, you know, time flew by and they were organized really well. They had a fairly complicated kind of which game do you want in these sessions that you could sign up for the initial 2 on the website. And I was a little bit engaged in getting the getting to the location, being in a different city, and making sure I understood what was going on in the games to actually submit my one for the third one. But they found a place for me anyway. They're running a games on demand stream as well, so it was all good. They also have a cool thing called the Adventure Squad for smaller role players to have fun. And judging by the yellow,
are we talking midgets or children here?
We're talking children here.
Just checking.
And judging by the yelling and screaming coming out of that room, someone was having fun. So that's pretty cool. And, yeah, there was a number of highlights. I got to play in my first Dungeon World game.
Ooh.
Which was hella fun. That was very cool. Actually, I'll just roll through the things I did in vague order as I've written them down.
Yep, I had a question. Said it wasn't exactly a competition.
You could nominate people for doing cool stuff. And
gotcha.
They had a bit of a acknowledgement / prize giving, because they've got some sponsors as well, but it's not really a... I recall you weren't that keen on the GM's... the GM rating players in the game, things that we've seen in the past.
No, though that was in a large part not because of the nature and personality of the GMs in question, that it was in the context of that particular gaming competition, it was blatantly obvious that the ratings had very little to do with what happened in the game and very much to do with who the GM was currently sleeping with or wanted to.
You terrible cynic, you.
Yes, but also an accurate one in this case.
All right. So I'll run down quickly the sort of games that we played. The first one was a complete freeform, pretty much systemless thing that... Well, the gentleman had been running a Guy Ritchie-style crime gang thing for many years, over the course of the conventions. And the most recent one, the players played the police that locked those guys up. This year, he was running the game where you played the body doubles of the famous actors playing the renamed XBs of the original gangsters. And the production had just moved to Prague for mysterious reasons.
I see.
And it was pretty cool. So I got to play Ray Winston Standen, who was standing in for a character called Piranha, who was standing in for a real-life mobster called Sharky.
I'm going to admit, I'm having flashbacks to a certain scene from Tropic Thunder.
Yes, we did have a character go as... They said, full retard. The point at which one of the characters had possibly taken some illicit substances and had a blow to the head and decided he was the original gangster, not just the actor that he was pretending to be. And and my guy playing a rather softly spoken gent who was in awe of Ray Winston, who was the stand-in for, was going, oh, he's really got the energy. He's got really into character. It's awesome. Method acting. Yeah. And egging him on to do increasingly more and more dangerous things while the rest of the cast plotted to, injure or sicken or possibly just stab their lead, the person their understudy for, so they could slide into the role.
I see.
It was really well handled as one of those games where you start off in a bar in Prague with nothing to do because the production's been called off for a while, and it spiraled naturally into chaos and stuff due just to rumours and so forth given to the players.
Interesting.
Followed that up with Avatar World, which is a Avatar The Last Airbender powered by the apocalypse thing. I would really keen to look more of that system. I think it's out there loose on the internet. Though during the game itself, I fade into the background a bit. I have a habit of being a supporting cast member, and no one was really doing anything, so it was hard. Well, the game kind of moved, but it was a little tricky.
I kind of get the idea that Apocalypse World works best when people are out there and doing stuff.
And it doing stuff in relation to one another. Possibly, I think, the failure states in it were a little bit too... They swerve between kind of a bit too... You're supposed to screw things up in Apocalypse World, but kind of skewed wildly between comedic and stopping us from moving on. That might have had influence, and we definitely needed to work with one another's characters a bit more. The third one was Titans of Chaos, which was interesting because I got a very, very famous four kids in a boarding school, but the boarding school was weird. There were more teachers and classrooms and so forth than there were students, and strange things started happening, and that was really weird and interesting. Though there were a lot of, it was one of those puzzle box games where you have to kind of figure out what the point of the game is, what the setting is, and all unfolded from there. Really interesting ideas, but it was a lot of time just trying to wrap your head around, my character can do a weird thing. How does this relate to anything?
What was the system for that one?
It was pretty much systemless.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was the system was talking.
The system was GM Fiat, right. Okay.
And for the fourth, or last on that Saturday, was played a game of Life on Mars, which is a really simple but contemplative sort of game where four players, a very simple map representing your journey to Mars and your efforts on the planet, take the role of astronauts on a manned voyage to Mars looking for life. And okay. Every round you kind of get to ask a question or make a statement or have a conversation with somebody. And we kind of built a weary astronauts kind of had a, yeah, it was a really interesting game. A good coming down kind of experience at the end of the first day. It being Wellington, there was wind whipping past the windows, howling ominously. So it was
nice.
Quite atmospheric. Yeah, that was a really good experience. And I got a chance to play with Michael Sands, who made Monster of the Week. He runs under Generic Games. He was a lovely fellow, and I bought a copy of this game off of him. That was a really cool experience to wind down on the first day. Most of the con were out LARPing in superhero costumes and having a emotionally affecting time, so it sounds like they had fun as well, but we were... The four of us were kind of cooped up in one of the rooms off the side, experiencing the loneliness and grandeur of Mars. So that was quite cool.
The fact that they had a superhero laugh is also entertaining.
Yeah, no, it went down pretty well.
Cool.
On the second day, as I said, Dungeon World, great fun, really pacey, interesting. We didn't actually go into any dungeons, but we basically just through questions, created a bizarre world and defeated an evil empire. And it was pretty, I think it went on more of a accelerated clip than you might for a home game, but that was pretty cool. And lots of crazy shenanigans happened. And we definitely dug into the powered by the apocalypse thing of you try a thing, you succeed or you screw up or things get exciting stuff. So that was really fun. Then I played in a fate hack based on Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, which I was glad that I had watched and listened to an episode or so, because it's a podcast done for the Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Okay, I knew Sparks Nevada rang a bell, but I wasn't sure why.
Mm. And it is a bizarre throwback to old-timey radio shows, with Sparks Nevada, who is from Earth. That's one of his aspects.
I see.
And his somewhat defeated-sounding margin, that's the correct pronunciation, apparently, Tracker, Croach, and a couple of other characters who are not as familiar, well, the Red Plains Raider and Pema Lee, the survivor from the Moon's Punishment Soccer League, which is all very bizarre. But there were some good moments. I think that's a Hunger Games ripoff, but I'm not super sure. I haven't caught up with that. But when one of the players exclaimed, "Punishment soccer at halftime, you don't get oranges, you get more soccer." He got into that role. That was really impressive. And the last game was a Scooby-Doo-esque craziness, run by a friend also called Will. From the local environs, where we played like teenagers. And this was exciting because we got, among the players, we had an actual teenager who was playing a year older than herself at 13 to 14, and her dad. So that was odd, but interesting. It was impressive when the dad was even more teenagery than the teenager.
Well, the dad has the advantage of being able to see a model of teenage behavior from, as it were, the outside.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, sometimes you're going, yes, the young lady does something particularly teenagerish, and you go, ooh, you're good.
It turns out that I, from the look of it, have actually passed through Sparks, Nevada once.
The place itself?
The place itself. Took a train to San Francisco at one point, and it did stop off in Reno, which is right next to Sparks. I believe somebody's comment was, or the comment made is that Reno is so close to hell you can see Sparks.
Nice.
From memory, the train guide did say that even though they stop at the station and even though there is a casino right there, if you leap off the train at the station, go running upstairs, put a coin into a slot machine, haul the lever, collect your winnings, run downstairs, you will make it to the platform in time to see the train leave. Sorry, the name just sounded really familiar, so I...
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if that's that has come from somewhere. Cool. So, yeah, it was a good weekend, and really useful and fun playing with random folks, and yeah, a really good crowd. They were a very, very friendly lot. So yeah, if you're in Wellington when the next one rolls around, which is probably around Wellington anniversary weekend, I would thoroughly recommend checking out.
Is it the sort of thing you think you'd go to again?
It's a strong possibility. I had a good time. It'd been nice to hopefully catch up with some folks on the social medias.
Cool.
So, what about your preparations for Gen Con 11-11, whatever it is?
Oh, I'm not actually sure which number it is. It'd be my third Gen Con.
Wow.
But I don't know which. Will it tell me the number? Not specifically, but it's got to be in the high 40s by now.
Yeah, they've given up on crowing about that, presumably.
Oh, it was for For Gen Con 45, they had a they had like a t-shirt and everything. But yeah, it doesn't seem to be specifically listed on the website, so presumably it's not any particularly significant number this time round. Hang on, what have we got? No, even Wikipedia is not willing to tell me. Damn their oily hides. Yes, so I am planning to hit Gen Con again this year and have at certain times regretted having the email updates from the Gen Con forums, because it was plodding along for a while, and then as badge registration and hotel registration got closer, and yeah, as we record this, badge registration started 4.5 hours ago, and I think hotel reg is about a day and a half away, give or take.
So the forum updates have become belligerent and numerous.
They're certainly flowing thick and fast. It did definitely give me something to read when I was in at the blood donor center, because there was just this stream of email updates coming in. Because they've changed the way a few things work in the system, specifically to do with how hotels are booked. And that's caused some concern from people, some furious ire from other people, and an awful lot of, okay, can we clarify this point? How does this specific situation work from the vast majority of them? So the forum mods and the various organizing people at Gen Con have been kept busy, and I think the CEO and one of the other sort of high ranking people have cropped up a couple of times to respond to queries.
Wow.
Oh, just to get the idea that it's very difficult to explain every possible facet and combination of the system in a way that means that everybody will understand it and there will be no unanswered questions.
Yeah, everyone will get their answers, the answer to the questions on the fact. There's just too many moving parts.
Yeah, and when you've got a system of, you know, if you buy a badge, you can book a room. If you have buy three badges, you can book two rooms, and so on and so on. And
role players love shit like that. They need a chat.
It does remind me. I think it was Champions worked like that. Bits of the Champion system where there were certain numbers that it was worth. You would optimize by spending
breakpoints. The word is.
Yeah, you would spend up to but not past the breakpoint because.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or you'd get you get to know. Well, that sounds chaotic and harrowing. My Capcom experience was way less.
I don't know how the actual process has gone. I mean, in previous years, watching the hotel booking system, and you know, for clarification for the audience, I have a VIG badge, so the housing thing doesn't directly affect me. It does affect people I know, and it's kind of interesting to watch because what has happened in a number of previous years is that everybody hits the system at midday, all at the same time. Bits of the system crash. People get various ways through the system, and then it'll crash, so they don't know whether they actually made a purchase or not. Yeah. The whole thing gets overloaded. What they're trying this year is a system where, at the stroke of midday, every account that has a badge purchased for it gets assigned randomly to a place in a queue, stretching over about 2 hours. Once the once that time slot comes up, from that point onward you can book rooms.
Right.
So it's basically trying to spread that initial load out over a longer period. A lot of complaints seem to have come from people who previously had either been good or lucky or a bit of both with the previous system, and kind of see this as a case of, well, I can be really prepared and still end up at the 2 hour mark. That doesn't seem fair, which from their point of view, I guess they're right.
Well,
but from the other point of
it seems less fair for me, which is means it's more fair for someone else, which is how fair works.
That is the thing. I mean, the argument, the sort of counter argument is that the system was always somewhat random. It's just that the randomness was in microseconds of delay time, whether the system chose you to freeze up on and lock out.
Whether you tapped into the data center, so your ping times were sub 1 millisecond.
Yeah. Yes, you'd actually set yourself up at the exchange, and yeah, this kind of thing. I mean, one of the big reasons I went with the VIG thing is, coming from New Zealand, I knew there was not a snowball chance in hell that I was going to be able to interact with the housing system from the other side of the planet.
Yeah. No, that's
the ping times would have just been enormous, and the odds on actually getting a room that wasn't like a railway overbridge.
Yes, it's a worry when your Twitch reflexes are a concern in hotel booking. That's a concern. All right.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is just there are more people than there are hotel rooms, and yep. Everybody wants the connected hotels.
Mm. Cool. All right, so we'll get you to keep us updated as your epic journey approaches, and we'll
my journey that. To the from here, it's a journey to the east.
Well, yeah.
A journey to the, yeah.
Well, you could go to the west. It'll just take longer.
I did look at the western route. There are a few options.
Is it north by northeast?
We're talking spherical trig, so it gets a little bit interesting there. But, yeah, probably north-northeast. Ish.
Cool.
Very, very approximately.
All right. So, back to the Will Tent. Okay, for episode 44, Gravity Princess. The Gravity family are the heroic protectors of Fortune City. Gravity Guy, Gravity Gal, Gravity Girl, and Gravity Guy Jr. Except that when... Good grief. So, I'll try that again. The Gravity family are the heroic protectors of Fortune City. Gravity Guy, Gravity Gal, Gravity Girl, and Gravity Guy Jr. Except that Gravity Girl has reached her 18th birthday and is tired of helping people, and renaming herself Gravity Princess has turned to a life of crime. She's managed to subdue her entire family and now aims to sit on the throne of the crime lords of Fortune City. It's now up to our intrepid heroes, low-level supers in their own right, to take down Gravity Princess and her henchmen. I envisage this game as being rather silly. Perhaps a fiasco game or something along those lines, but definitely silly. GURPS seems like it would work, but I generally find it too dark for silliness especially. Fate would probably work as well. I kind of like that pitch, and yeah, silly.
This one speaks to me mostly because I've quite recently watched Megamind.
Right, yes, definitely.
Yeah,
Cool.
Go ahead.
I like the idea. Can't really say much more than that. If you pitched that to me, I'd go, hell is yeah. GURPS could work if you made it a very four-color rule set for supers. They had a couple of different things where you didn't just explode people when you punched them and so forth. But yeah, that could work.
Hmm. Yeah, it is one where there's really not a lot to say other than yes, would play that. Would play the shit out of that. That would be, you know, the fiasco version of it would be entertaining as well, because somebody out there must have done a fiasco supers playset or
that,
10.
That seems inevitable, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the notion that you're going up against the stroppy superpowered millennial.
That is true.
And in some approaches to the scenario, the ultimate resolution would be rescuing the parents and getting them to talk sternly to her. It might not be in every sort of play.
That feels to me like the 50s Americana version of this.
It does really, doesn't it?
Yeah, so Gravity Guy and Gravity Gal will turn up, and Gravity Guy will be wearing his uniform, but he'll also be wearing a sweater vest, and he might have a pipe.
Yes, yes. Cool. All right, so what's that next one?
Okay, next one. What have we got? Yeah, I wish I could say more about the Gravity Princess Supers one, but it's just no. That's fucking awesome. When you're running it, is kind of what comes to mind, unfortunately. Okay, next one up for episode 45, The Department of Monstrous Changes. Will has written a novel. Okay, what have we got? Okay. I went the university department route and came up with a card game. Yes, I'm fond of card games. The players are university doctoral students in the field of transmogrification. In order to earn their PhD, they must study and transmogrify 10 monsters. There are decks of cards representing the monsters and their alter egos. Wolfman, Larry Talbot, Dracula, Blood, Tepes, Frankenstein's monster, Dr. Frankenstein, with a kind of a question mark there. The Mummy, Imhotep, Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll, The Thing, MacReady, a zombie, Ben, from Night of the Living Dead. Nice. Jack Torrance, Danny Torrance. Don't recognize that one.
Is that from The Shining?
Maybe. The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Kay Lawrence, Jason Voorhees, Pamela Voorhees, etc. And the players must change one identity to the other. Some of these are more difficult than the others. I mean, it would be hard to change Jason into his mother. Other pairings could obviously be chosen instead. Tools to make the change could be Wolfsbane to change between the Wolfman to Larry Talbot, a wooden stake for Dracula and Vlad Tepes, bandages for the Mummy and Imhotep, etc. The first player to transmogrify all 10 wins. I'm envisaging plays similar to Munchkin. You start with a hand of cards and draw a monster card. You would need both identities and the implement of change in play to count that as a success.
Hmm.
I've not actually played a lot of Munchkin. It didn't amazingly grab me as a game.
It actually sounds way more like Flux. The idea that you'd have a mixed pile and have goals that, and to, well, maybe the goals are implicit rather than Flux, where they keep you in place on the table. But the idea would be to collect in front of you, Wolfman, Talbot, Full Moon, and that would be your set. So it'd be kind of go fish almost with monsters.
Indeed, you'd want to have a bunch of, if the goal is to make it to 10 monsters, yeah, modified version of Flux, because then that allows for the hilarious, I am going to pinch this thing from you, or everybody changes hands one to the left.
Yeah, so the stuff in front of you is in one status, the stuff in your hand is in another status, and you're trying to get them to sync up so you can say, oh, boom, I have Jason Voorhees. Okay. And the Jason Voorhees changes to his mother comment immediately made me go to Norman Bates, Psycho.
Yes.
Except the transmogrifying thing would be years of psychological abuse.
If, given that the word transmogrify is there, I think we have to have at least the option of Calvin Hobbes. Doesn't really count as a monster.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible. Yeah, Munchkin. You're normally collecting things to. I suppose you could do it in a Munchkin style thing, is you collect items to allow you to change one to another. But the likelihood that you would get them both out, yeah, I'm not too sure how you'd do that. It's Flux sounds like actually a really interesting fit.
Well, you've got the situation here where you potentially want a rules system where you're having done the transmogrification, you don't need the bits anymore.
Ah, and you can pass those on.
You can pass those on, or you can do some horse trading.
Hmm.
So that kind of system of you know, I have done the Mummy Imhotep, and bonus points if you could come up with more than one monster that uses each thing.
Yeah, and maybe there are, you know, generic citizen becomes zombie, so or generic citizen becomes blob or something like that. So there are types that specifically change and can change into many monsters or things like that. So there are more than one path for some of them.
Yes.
Maybe the ones that are very specific are high value.
That would make sense, yeah, if you can knock off the really high value, very, very specific.
Counts for 2 of your 10 or 3 of your 10 hat trick, depending on how tricky it is.
Oh, nice.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. That needs workshopping, though, I think.
Yeah, I'm sort of imagining something where if you can, if you can successfully transmogrify Dracula, it might count for 2, or it might allow you to do something else. So if you've successfully done a Dracula transmogrification, you get to pinch a card from somebody else's hands.
Hmm. Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, lots of mechanics like that. So that, like in Flux, the outcome is really, if ever certain, even when it's just occurred.
Flux is still the only game I have ever seen somebody win while asleep. that was phenomenal.
It must have been.
Cool.
Okay, so, and now we've got our final rounding out. We've got episode 47, Pay at the Troll Booth. We're still sorry for that episode, people.
But I'm not. I'm not in any way sorry for that episode. I think that was awesome. I think that, in particular, traveling through the Troll Bridge was inspired. And I will shut up now.
Yes, you will. All right. In a dystopian cyberpunk future, probably using GURPS or maybe Shadowrun, Big Boss Joseph Marconi, many times great grandson to...
I'd go with Guillermo.
Guillermo, yep. Guillermo Marconi, so he claims, is a mid-level crime boss in the city. Guarding the front door to his club, which he runs as a front for his illegal businesses, is a troll who's been magically and cybernetically altered so that his entire inside is a bank, and the fee you have to pay to get into the club is given to the troll, who swallows the payment whole. You do not want to know how they get the money out. At some point, the PCs will have to break into this club. They can, if they choose the front door, they'll have to fight the troll. If they choose to be sneaky, great, but they'll have to fight the troll on the way out. The bad news is that they have to fight the troll. The good news is that the survivors get to split the money they get for beating the troll. There could also be treasure of some kind for those who don't carry cash, but have magical items available. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, enough cybernetic stuff. You could definitely have compartments and so forth. Maybe the troll is no longer using his digestive system for its original purpose.
I am imagining somebody with an ATM sticking out of their gut at this point.
Yes. That would be an interesting twist on a game. It's kind of horrible on several levels.
Oh, this is Knuckles, my banker.
Literally.
Mm.
Yeah, that could be an interesting twist. I mean, you could do this in a fantasy setting as well.
It might be slightly less creepy in a fantasy setting, because in a modern-day civil rightsy sort of setting, that's really creepy.
Oh. Yeah, on Shadowrun, they don't have a loose grasp of civil rights or something that happened to people a long time ago.
So yeah.
This isn't out of the question, but yes, interesting. The presenting is that you have to fight the troll might feel a bit railroady, but the possibility that they are in pursuit of something, and they need to get this certain thing to complete their mission, they really need it, and they're engaged in a firefight, and our big boss sees it's not going his way, and just calmly goes, "Franz," or whatever the troll's name is. Has him swallow the item. It's like, screw you guys.
I was wondering about that, if there's something they need from the troll.
Yeah.
Because that potentially means that you're trying to, depending on how you want to go with the game and depending on how the cybernetic, the cyber gizzard works, mental note, do not use that phrase again. actual note, do not use that phrase again. I'm imagining a circumstance where people go into the club perfectly normally, handing over, actual coinage or whatever, one of which is a cunningly concealed transmitter and wireless link, so they can attempt to hack the troll's internal organs.
Oh my goodness. We're going down the wrong path again, are we? So what you're getting your Decker to do is literally make the troll drop his guts.
Yes, but in a very specific order.
Ooh. So something kind of like a slot machine.
Indeed, yes. you're trying to get a triple onion on the slot machine, as it were. Of course, then you have the very minor problem that you either need to be in the right place at the right time when the automated system spits out this item.
Spits.
Yeah, you know, if we're being nice, it either spits out. Yeah, you either need to be there when the troll feels very ill and throws up the item, or you need to be in the right place if the thing perhaps disgorges just. You know, if there's basically just a abdominal opening.
Yes.
You know, the hatch opens and this thing comes out on a little conveyor. Or possibly, if we're going with the horrible and fundamental thing, you need to be there at the right time so that when the troll clutches himself and clutches his stomach and soils his trousers, you can be there to grab the shiny thing from the result.
Yes. I think that there's definitely a underexplored facet of cyberpunk stories. You know, they do these things where they hack people's mental landscapes and change what they see when they could just make them cack themselves.
I did always think for Shadowrun purposes that you've got all the trank guns and all that kind of thing, but a combination of a large dose of caffeine and other stimulants plus something hallucinogenic would be far more effective for distraction and getting rid of the guards purposes.
Yes, it would.
Personal thing, GM wouldn't let me try it. Still bitter.
Still bitter. So, well, we managed to... The curse of episode 47 strikes again.
Thank you, straight to hell, Thunderstep.
Yes. All right, so at least that's consistent.
Indeed. Cool. Consistently horrible and apparently obsessed with the internal organs of trolls. I'm a little bit worried about us at this point.
Indeed. Something is terribly wrong. Send help. Okay, so that would be our audience contributions episode. Will throws down the gauntlet.
And he threw it down pretty hard.
He did. That was you haven't been saving these up or anything, or any...
This was a combination of two emails.
Yikes.
So, yeah, there's some. I am quite liking the you know, this is my personal bank knuckles, for a cyberpunky sort of game, and it's shades of Johnny Mnemonic,
to a degree, yes.
Except instead of storing data in somebody's head, you're storing actual physical items.
Yep, you've pretty much. You're not quite gone full conversion cyborg, but you have made a walking tank with a safe in it to protect your property, which is doable. I'm fairly sure that that's definitely a thing. Yes, but the notion that he can just chuck something down his esophagus and it's identified as being a something he needs to store securely, you know, rattles into
the appropriate pouch.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, Will. That was awesome. That was a bunch of crazy ideas.
Indeed.
And we will...
At least a few of which just got the, yep, when are you running it, response.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once again, our audience has conspired to make us look like the hacks we are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good, and really what this podcast is all about.
Indeed, this is us failing to throw down the gauntlet as a challenge. We are provoking people to pick up the gauntlet and throw it down through by merely being here.
Mm.
We're providing a service.
Wow, we are just that noble.
Indeed.
Okay, let's stop now before we tell lies so big that even Skype can't cope with them.
How's it doing, by the way?
It seems to be okay. In the call quality line.
It taketh and it giveth and it taketh away.
As long as it keepeth the records, we're fine. As far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much for tuning in, listener. We hope you enjoyed Will's ideas. And frankly, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And we will catch you next time.
Well, see you later.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to HOARDE.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 Unported from CreativeCommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at Krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!